been sober since October 28, 1985. For that, I'm forever grateful. Here with a contingent of my peers, my home group members, Dog Tired Men Stag from Mesa, Arizona. The best home group on the planet. I've enjoyed the weekend so far. I'm struggling with a couple of things I've heard, like don't think and drink at the same time. I don't know if I ever did that. I thought and then I drank, you know. Or I drank and then I thought. I don't know. Anyway, you know, I'll get back with you on that. Nobody in this room ever saw me when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, in on or about October 28, 1985, but there's a lot of people in this room that saw me wander into Dog on a Roof May of 2001. And for those of you who don't know anything, I'm a Keith Drum stalker. I heard him share in 1986 at the Flagstaff Roundup, and I stalked him for 15 years before I actually sent him an email. I had an epiphany. I think that's the word. I'm kind of, you know, I'll use it, you know. And I sent him a text message, and I was in my office, and it was like somebody was standing behind me. And I heard, hasn't been necessary for me to drink any whiskey or do any dope since May the 11th, 1976, and for that I'm forever grateful. I jumped out of my chair, I turned around, nobody was there. And because of the fact that, you know, I'm a stalker, I knew where he was, you know. And so I emailed him or something. I said, you don't know me from Adam, but something really weird happened to me. It was about, I believe it was like May 7th or May 8th. And if it's what happened is true, you and Sue will be celebrating 25 years in 4 days. And I sent the email. And about 5 minutes later, I got the email back, and it said, "We're having a party. Why don't you come out?" And, you know, and that's where it all started for me. Like I said, there's a lot of people that saw me there that weekend. And then because I was unwilling to ask for help, I never made it back for the dance. Because my motorcycle was at the shop, and somebody said, "You need us to stay, and you want to follow us back to the hall." And it was like, no problem. I can find my way back. And I drove around in the rain for about an hour and a half. You know, I couldn't find the place, and I went back to the hotel. And I got up about 4 o'clock in the morning because there was a big Mexican wedding going on on the room of the hotel there where I was staying, and. I went downstairs and I screamed and yelled, and I didn't want to be charged for my hotel stay because I didn't get any sleep. And I jumped on a bike and I drove home in the rain, and I was back about 2 weeks later. And I think you were all surprised to see me again, because you probably thought, geez, you know, another guy that came and saw what we did and wasn't willing, and he didn't even come back for the dance. But it was just because, you know, I was, because I did not ask for help. And I got lost. And so 6 years ago, I was an army of one. Today I have a home group. I am a part of a home group in Mesa, Arizona that happens to meet on Tuesdays and Fridays in my backyard. And we've come a long way. We've come a long way in the last year. Some of the guys came out with me, and I think we'll start. We're just going to talk about how we're doing recovery in Mesa, Arizona, and I have a funny feeling you're going to hear a lot of things, a lot of similar things than how you all do Alcoholics Anonymous in Fullerton and your own home groups, because. You know, there's places like this and people like you that have taught us how to do what we do. So first on the list is Larry has the most spiritual story on the face of the planet. I love Larry because he got spiritual stirring corn. So come on up, Larry.
My name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 1st, 2006, and I'm grateful for that. One thing I've learned is that I've had to get completely uncomfortable to get any kind of recovery process. And when I'm comfortable, I know I'm not in the middle. I'm not doing the right thing. And you know, I've heard a lot of good stuff from the speakers, and it's been an incredible weekend so far. There we go. I had no idea how to stop drinking. I couldn't. I had come in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for years. I would do what you suggested. I got into the steps. I got a sponsor. At some point, I got into service work. And it was always about the pats on the back, and I just wanted you to like me, and there was a real lack of recovery, and the happy, joyous, and free for me was hanging out at coffee shops with, you know, girls with 30 days sober, and, you know, I had a wife, what was then my fiance back then, at home, and, you know, and I got my ego fed, and I felt really good about myself, and I battled through this thing with the idea that I somehow was outgrowing the people in my life, and the grass is always greener on the other side, and sure enough, I'd leave and I'd drink. And that was my pattern for about 10 years. About every 2 years, I'd do the same thing over and over again. I met these guys over at Dog Tired. Harry had a bunch of rules back then when he first started the meeting, and I started going to the meeting, and you had to be sponsored by somebody in the group, and there was this there was a whole list of things, and I wasn't sponsored by anybody in the group, so it gave me an excuse to leave. And I left and I drank, and, you know, back and forth, and I kept being told to show up back in the backyard, and I went over there, and I didn't like what everybody was talking about because they were talking about the answer, and I just wanted to hear about people's problems, and I wanted to share mine, and I just got my butt kicked, man. I came rolling in this time, and I never had anything, and everything I did have, I stole, you know, and everything I stole, I traded for booze and to feel good, and for a life of misery, and we were homeless, you know, my wife and my kid, and we were living down in homeless shelters on Van Buren. I've been, you know, in and out of the institutions, you know, similar stories. I just didn't get it, and I wasn't willing to do the work to get it, and I come rolling in this time, and I got my butt kicked, and I don't know what was different about this time, but it was, you know, I had things. We have this little home, and we got a business, and which was going to shit. We had things. You know, we had money in the bank, but I was just so bankrupt, man. I just got my butt kicked, and I knew where I was going, and I just didn't want to live the way I was living. And I showed back up at the Dogs, and for 6 months, man, I was miserable. I'm sponsored outside of the group. I think I have a really good sponsor and a line of sponsorship. But I was miserable, and I was pissed, and I wanted a drink, but I didn't want to drink, and I just didn't want to go down and, you know, have the same life that I had in the past, and I didn't know what to do, but I knew what I'd done in the past was just coming to meetings. You know, I didn't drink. You know, I was miserable, and I was always trying to do things to feel like all you guys looked, and the only thing that ever worked for me was booze. You know, I mean, there was, God was non-existent, and I kind of horseshitted my way through the steps, and so. For 6 months, I sat in the backyard, and these guys are talking about the same thing, about the solution, and I couldn't identify with it, you know, and I'd go home, and my wife was sharing with somebody last night that I used to come home and say how uncomfortable I was, you know, in this group, and I tell my sponsor, I'm fucking uncomfortable, and he said, well, stay, you need to stay, and so I stuck around, and after about the 6 month mark, we went to Lake Mead, and I really didn't want to go, I just didn't want to go, but I decided to go. I wanted to go check it out. We're going through some stuff with our girls, and a couple of days before, one of my daughters did a little suicide attempt, and it was a big mess. And I was down with her at the hospital, she was shackled and three-pointed, and the next day or two or something like that. After that, we were getting ready to go to Lake Mead, and I just, you know, that was my excuse not to go, and I decided to go anyways. I pulled up to Harriet's house about 4 o'clock in the morning, something like that, and I decided I was going to drive. I was going to get in the Excursion. I was going to drive just in case anything happened. I needed to come back, and it was my getaway vehicle. And he said, just get in the fucking car. Put your shit in the fucking car. And I went stomping away. You know, I'm walking back to my truck, and I'm going, fuck this guy. You know, I'm going on. He's not going to tell me what to do. And I reluctantly grabbed my stuff, man. I didn't want to throw it in. I was just going to tell him that I'm driving. That's it. And I didn't. I left my truck there, and I got in the truck, and I was completely out of my skin, uncomfortable. My phone was glued to my ear, and the text messages, and how's everything. And, you know, we get up to Lake Mead, and I was, you know, I was glued to my phone. My wife, after the 30th time I called her, she said, do you miss me? You know, I was like, no, I just want to make sure everything's okay. And for about half the weekend, man, I was miserable. There's 120 guys up there or something like that. And, you know, I didn't connect with anybody except for a guy who had 90 days sober, and it was just as miserable as I was, you know. I said, there's something wrong with this, you know. And so Andy W. was my roommate, and he pretty much pulled my head out of my ass for me there in the room. And he insisted I throw away my phone. I shouldn't have brought it. But you don't understand. And my daughter, you can yeah, but all you want. And, you know, something happened. And I rebelled against that conversation, and I didn't want to listen to him. He told me to go help the guys who just broke down on the motorcycles. I mean, I'm like, what? I don't do motorcycles. I don't know why. It was like the third time somebody broke down on a motorcycle that weekend, and I said, why don't you guys drive cars? You know? And he said, well, you're missing the point. That's exactly the point. If you're out there helping these guys, you're not thinking about yourself and your little petty problems. And you know, and I didn't realize it right then, but I closed the door, and I'm like, I'm not going to help with those guys with the bikes. And I went outside, and I was still miserable. My phone was inside, and there were some guys from Oregon cooking over there, and I was walking down. I was like, fuck. So I offered my help to cook, and where can I help? And they put me on corn. And you know, and all I'm thinking about is the phone, and you know, and taking a cab down to the airport and get the hell out of there. And I started stirring the corn, you know, and where can I help? You know, can I take this? Can I take this? Throw this away. Wash these pans. And I'm stirring the corn. Anything I need to put in it. And I'm thinking about cooking for 120 guys, and it's just corn, but I didn't want to fuck up corn for 120 guys, you know. So that whole time I'm cooking this big pot of corn, I'm throwing butter in it. Is that enough? I'm stirring it, and some guy comes by and says, how's the corn going? I said, pretty good. And I said, you can't screw up corn. He goes, sure you can. And he walked away, and I'm, you know, I get back into the corn more, you know, I just did not want to screw up corn for 120 guys, man. I just didn't want to do that. And, you know, so 45 minutes passed, something like that, and I'm washing dishes and I'm taking stuff in, and the realization came to me, man. I had a problem that I had no control over. It was in Chandler, Arizona. You know, the relationships in my life were none of my business at that point, and there's nothing I could do about them, whether I was there or not. You know, and just by taking the little actions to get out of my head, I was able to snap out of it and experience the weekend. That was really cool. You know, and I got a chance to hear the speaker stand up there the rest of the weekend, and one guy, he stood up there and he said, I decided I'm no longer going to be a coward, you know, and that just floored me, you know, and I got to hear that, and on the trip back, you know, I was thinking about my life and AA and service work and the stuff that I didn't want to do, but that I knew that I had to do, and I came back and I got down, you know. I got a few sponsees that next week, and I got in the middle of the group, and I started doing things I never would have done, man. And I still don't want to do the things that I do, you know. I was working with some newcomers, and I got one guy I'm sponsoring right now. When I see you guys, the unity here, man, it's just incredible, you know. I mean, not just the unity, but you've got, you know, guys with 18, 20, 25 years in the middle of service work, you know, and they're not just pawning it off on, you know, the goats, the guys just coming in, and, you know, it's just incredible to see, you know. Well, that's what I am, I'm a goat. I belong mopping floors and cleaning out toilets. So, I got a good life today, man. I just try to stay in the middle. I've gone through the steps. I reached my hand out. I'm involved in another group, and we have a little service commitment over there, and I just try to stay busy, you know, and I just do the things that I don't want to do. I do the things that I'm uncomfortable doing, and I put God in the middle of it, and when I don't, I screw up my life, my day, my week, my months, you know, the cool thing is, if I'm in the middle, even though I get my head stuck up my butt every once in a while, and I kind of start to drift off, I got guys around me, and I'm in the middle long enough to where I can get back in, you know, I don't have to go drink. I just don't want the life I had, man, and I'm willing to do anything, you know, for a better life. I got a good life today. You know, we've gone through some hell. You know, we've got the same thing as you talked about with the daughters, and we pretty much helped them pack up and said, go figure it out. You know, we love you, we support you, but the game is over. And the harmony in our house returned, and we've been able to focus on our, you know, on recovery and our marriage, and you know, we have another son who's young who lives with us, and you know, it's been really cool. There's a lot of room for growth in our house. You know, all I know, man, is I've got to do the things and get uncomfortable to walk through the fear. You know, when I drank, it took away all that. You know, and I came in and I got sober, and I, you know, the booze was no longer the problem. I had to learn how to live. You know, one thing I didn't know how to do without sticking needles in my arm or drinking. You know, I just didn't know how to do it. And you guys teach me that. You know, this, I'm pretty fired up, man. This is, you know, I try to stay a little pissed off sometimes just because I get caught up in that happy horse shit. When I hear about enthusiastic AA, I heard Clancy I talking about it, and I'm like, I never heard about it before, and I never seen it. And, but I always related it to when I was just coming in and out and in and out and you know, and hooking up and going to coffee, and there was no recovery, you know, but I felt good, you know, not inside, but I felt good, you know, and I thought you guys liked me, and I was doing the right things, and I was accepted, and I was enough for the first time, and I knew that I wasn't, and you know, that was happy, joyous, and free, and I got loaded every time, you know. You know, you guys are just awesome examples of what this deal is about, and I've never seen the unity and you know what Keith is talking about, you know, sponsorship, God, and the steps. You know, you guys live it, you know, and it's just examples of it. And I've got the guys in my group are just, there's a lot of young sobriety in there, and they're just examples of what commitment is. You know, I watch them, and it's like, fuck, you know. And I don't want to be the guy that's not doing what they're doing, and I just, you know, and I'm reluctant to do it half the time, and I just got to jump in there and do it. And do my part, so I'm passing.
Did you notice I picked his pocket while he... Yeah. All right, thank you, Larry. You know, I'm so selfish and self-centered that 4 out of 5 of these guys are my sponsees, and I had to go ask them who had the most sobriety so I could, you know, put them all on a list. but that's okay. Next we got Raul.
My name is Raul, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 10th, 2006, and for that I'm very grateful. And it's an honor to be up here today. Thank you for asking us to share. I know that the reason I've been able to stay sober has been because of God. God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and my home group. And it took me 20 years to realize that. You know, I didn't start drinking until I was almost 18. But I think that in about a year and a half, I was an alcoholic. And not long after that, you know, an addict, I'm pretty sure. But... anyway, you know, I wasn't ready to quit. I'd been in AA a couple of times, 2 or 3 times, and you know, my first opportunity to get sober was back when I was about 21. And I don't remember anything about the 3 times that I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting before I got sober. I don't remember a big book. I don't remember steps. I don't remember anyone coming up to me. And whether that was in front of me or not, I don't know. I wasn't interested enough to see it if it was. But, you know, for those 19 years, my pattern was that I would hit bottom take a break, back off, and then slowly build back up. I mean, you know the routine. We've all been there. But for 19 years, I was able to pull that off until the very end. Very end, when I actually realized that I didn't have any control over it anymore. You know, when I'd say, I'm not going to drink for a week, and I would drink the next day. I'd say, okay, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'd drink. When I started doing that day after day, that's when I really realized that it was out of control. And once I realized that, then it got really scary because I didn't know what to do. I planned out my sobriety date of July 10th. And, just kind of like what was kind of alluded to last night, I always got to plan things out. I always got to know what's going to happen. So I planned out my sobriety date like a month and a half ahead of time. And so for that month and a half, you know, I was going to party up as much as I could because then I was going to stop. And, thank God I didn't kill anybody because I definitely had those opportunities too, you know. I don't know. God was taking care of me. But I got to that date, and I somehow got through that day. I don't know how. I wasn't praying. I didn't have any Alcoholics Anonymous, no program, nothing. But somehow got through that day, and the next day, and the next day. And I started putting together a little bit of dry time and started to think that I was okay. You know, I can do this. It still never occurred to me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't think I needed to. I thought all I had to do was stop for a while. So I stopped for a while, 12 weeks. And the day came when, you know, that day when no power on earth will keep you from taking your first drink. Well, I got to that point. I didn't know what to do. I was freaking out. I really didn't know what to do. What I remembered was that I had been to these Alcoholics Anonymous meetings 3 times. And so it was sort of an act of desperation that I showed up. And it was going to just be to get through that moment. And so, I went online and I found a meeting. It was going to be at 12 o'clock. So, this was probably about 10:30, 11 o'clock. I text messaged one of my friends who was an NA, and I had kind of been talking to him, sort of flirting with the idea of quitting. Anyway, I told him I was in bad shape. I think I'm going to hit a meeting. And he called me back right away, and he held me on the phone until meeting time. I showed up at meeting time, complete shambles, complete disaster. Even though I hadn't drank for 12 weeks, I was a total mess. So I was perfect. I was in perfect condition to take the program. I don't remember a whole lot about that meeting, except that after the meeting was over, some guys came up to me and talked to me and introduced themselves, and I was just, kind of, okay, yeah, nice to meet you and everything. And one dude said, "Do you have a phone list?" This wasn't our home group meeting yet. It was another meeting that we go to sometimes. Anyway, I said, no. He got me a phone list. He put his number on it, and he said, "I belong to a really cool men's group that meets Tuesday nights. Here's their phone number. Call me if you want to come." And I was like, okay, cool. And I went home with no intention of calling because I'd gotten through the moment. I got some relief, in those 2.5 months, I didn't have any friends. I didn't go out anywhere. I was terrified to leave the house. During that time, of all places, I got sent to Las Vegas to go to a conference. And I would go from the conference to my hotel room, and I'd lock the door because I was terrified. I had no skills on how to get over any craving or anything. So, here I was. I got through the moment of not drinking that one day, and I was thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't know anybody who doesn't drink, so I'm going to go ahead and call him. Just look into a little bit. That guy was Drew. I called him. Said, "I think I'd like to check out this meeting you're talking about." So he gave me directions and all that. And that was probably, the first real step I took to staying sober was that I called him. So I showed up at Harry's backyard, actually with the patio back then, and was instantly welcomed by everybody. I felt love as soon as I walked in there. And, you know, I could barely get through that meeting without breaking down crying. I know I was almost there because I was just, you know, I just got super emotional. And they welcomed me. I felt at home. I mean, I found a home as soon as I walked onto that patio. And I've never left since, you know. I attached myself. Drew was assigned to be my sponsor. I attached myself to Drew, Harry, Brandon, Tate. And that's kind of how I stayed sober, was watching what they do. You know, doing what they did. These guys are all in the middle. So I got that message early on to get in the middle, participate, be part of something. You know, because on my own, you know, I was nothing. I was a wreck. I was an alcoholic. I was, everything I didn't want to be, but was. So that's kind of how I've been staying sober, watching them, doing what they do, working my steps as best as I can. These guys, Drew and Harry, they know everything about me, you know, everything good and bad. And they've heard a lot of my shit. They've heard a lot of my whining and my wallowing. And, you know, each time it's kind of like when you're done and you're ready to start living again, let's do this. And so, willingness has been the main part of my sobriety, willing to change, willing to take direction and do what I'm supposed to do. And so, you know, not long after I got sober, my wife went into Al-Anon, and, you know, we're a family in recovery now. And I love Al-Anon also. You know, I thank you all also because, you know, my family is unified again. And it's been because of my home group and my wife's Al-Anon program. And I actually go to a couple Al-Anon meetings when I can also, because when I first heard you at Ridgecrest, you know, I was blown away by what you were saying. And it really piqued my interest and I wanted to hear more. So, you know, I really feel like the circle of my recovery is complete, and so that if I just keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to be okay. Anyway, that's kind of how I've done it. I've got some sponsees. I just picked up my fourth one, and things are just going well. You know, I don't always feel qualified to sponsor these four guys, but I just kind of let God do the work, and I rely on my sponsors to help me through. And I don't know the answer to their questions or what to do next. I ask them for help, and that's why there's a chain of sponsorship. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it go for me, to Drew, to Harry, to Ruben, and that's why we're here, I guess, you know, and it's a great setup, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful to God. I'm thankful to you all, and that's all I got. Thank you.
All right, Drew. Drew got here, I think I met Drew, he had 4 days. I assigned him his first sponsor. I asked him if he had a sponsor, he said no. I said, Drew, meet Jason Milo, Drew, there's your sponsor, get to work. And then Jason left town. And he gave me Drew back. So it's all made full circle. Drew, come on up and do the deal.
Drew, alcoholic. Friday date is 6/18/05. Very thankful for that. That guy. Wouldn't be anywhere without him. You know, and you know, how do we stay sober in Arizona? How do I stay sober in Arizona? You know, I don't. We do. You know, it's one of the first things that Harry taught me. One of the first things you guys taught me. You know, like Harry was saying, I showed up on the patio 4 days sober, not really that sober yet, confused, scared, angry. You know, I hadn't worked a step yet, told myself I wasn't going to get a God, told myself I wasn't going to get a sponsor. I didn't know what they were for or what they were all about, didn't ask any questions, didn't want to know. And, you know, quickly, Harry intervened on that. You know, meet your new sponsor, okay. You know, I think I thought I had a lot more fight in me than I did. I was like, I was still lying to myself, you know, still living in fantasy land that I'm some Billy Badass, and that it was going to go my way, and I'm going to do it according to how I feel like doing it, and it just did not. My sobriety has not been like that at all. It's been a series of surrenders since day one, and you know, I had to surrender some of those early ideas of the way I'm going to do this and the way I'm going to stay sober. You know, one of the first things I recognized about these guys in Arizona is they move at a quicker pace than some of the other meetings I was going to. You know, you can, we do a lot of our fishing at the local meetings. You know, that's where I got picked up at. That's where I found Raul at. You know, and it's a lovely Sunday afternoon where I found Raul, you know, a month and a half dry, crying. And, dude, you know, let's go. And I know somewhere else where there's a better way to do it. And that's one of the things I'm grateful for is when I see a newcomer, I know that I'm not lying when I can say, hey, I got a better way you can do this. I got a group of guys who are my friends, you know, they're my roommates, they're my sponsors, they're my sponsees. I love these dudes, and you can stay sober there. You know, they're chasing sobriety, and they want it bad, and it's a good place to do it. You know, so when I get to invite newcomers, or pick them up and take them somewhere, I know I'm taking them to a good place, a solid place where they're going to get good sobriety and good feedback, you know. And, you know, so one of the things that we do is we do this. We come out to California. We come visit you guys. We see you guys. And it's been one of the best things that we could do. You know, it keeps us busy hosting you guys when you guys come in town. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, from the day that I walked in, you know, I had $20, a broken hand, and girlfriend was gone. You know, typical story to the day. You know, my home group is everything in my life. You know, the guys that I live with in my house, Brandon and Tate, you know, you'll meet them next. You know, they've, Tate, dude, you know. Let's talk about Tate for a minute. You know, I met Tate when I was 3 days sober, I think. You know, I was at a beginners and slippers meeting, my first one of those. And you know, first time I met Tate, he was still rocking long hair and hippie hats and stuff, and it's like, dude, that guy's high as hell. There's no way anybody in this room is sober, you know, because I didn't believe it when somebody said, oh, I got 22 years sober. I'm like, yeah, okay, you know. And Tate said he had like 2 months sober, and I was like, okay, you know. And, you know, it turned out, you know, that guy ended up, just he worked like a block from where I was living and going to school, and I would go see him. I would ride my bike over to where he was working, and we'd go out and talk, you know, in the back of the little hippie market he was working at, you know, and you know, we'd have a cigarette or something and talk and, you know, see how the day was going. And that was like my first introduction to the fellowship of AA, to my home group. You know, you meet up with somebody in the middle of your day, you're stressed out, you're pissed off. You know, I just got off the phone with my sponsor, but, you know, he's doing stuff. You know, I can talk to Tate, and, you know, Tate's always down to talk and listen. You know, he was one of the first examples to me of, you know, sitting down and actually caring about what somebody's saying, and when they're talking to you, not just looking at them and acting like you care. You know, just it's kind of my MO, you know. But, you know, it's the people in that home group, you know, and that fellowship that I've learned how to be around. I gotta say, it's been the greatest gift I've had in sobriety, besides actual being sober. The fellowship, you know, just from being such a lonely, single one person. You know, nobody understands it. Nobody gets me. Nobody will ever understand. To having a group of people around me, constantly calling me throughout the day. I'm calling them. They're keeping me busy. You know. My first sponsee, you know, not my first sponsee, the first guy I took through 12 steps, Raul. You know, now he's got 4 sponsees. I have 4 sponsees. It's amazing the way this thing just grows. You know, sometimes I was laughing about it with, I forget who it was the other day. I'm a grand sponsor. That's kind of weird. You know, they, you know, it's like every once in a while I got to, like, intervene on these guys. All right, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, and it's weird for me. be in that position, you know. I've always been that guy where Harry kind of comes in and is like, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, it's like, I think Harry, you know, he likes hanging out with us, but he's like, stay away every once in a while, guys. You know, you guys are nuts. And, you know, this place is an awesome place. This is my second year here. A little bit less nervous at the podium this year than I was last year, and hopefully it'll be better next year. But, you know, forgot what I was going to say again, just like last year. But thank you for asking me to speak. I'll pass. Thank you.
All right, next we got Tate. I remember last year we were here, and Tate came up. And for those of you who were here, I'm sure we'll see it again sometime this afternoon. He got that Charlie Manson gleam in his eyes, you know, and he said something, and I identified, and it scared the hell out of me. But I got to say that, over the course of the last year, Tate makes a lot of people think. Like Drew was saying, I'm new and I'm looking at this guy, and he says he's got a couple months, and he's going, does he really? You know? And over the course of the last year, for me, anyway, I really enjoy Tate. Compared to me, he's a freaking spiritual giant. You know what I mean? And I could sit there. He might be talking. He might be rambling in a meeting, and I don't have a clue, you know, what he's talking about. But it feels good. You know, it makes me feel good. I know someday I'm going to know what he's talking about. You know, because his heart's in the right place. Come on up, Tate.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tate. Sobriety date 4/13/05. Thanks for allowing us to speak and share here and be here. It's my heart is happy. I'm very very happy to be here, man. And good to be sober, you know. And everybody who put all this stuff in, you know, I mean, it takes work to do this, and I know work is love and action, so thank you, all those people behind the scenes, and what we're doing in Arizona to stay sober, you know, and we're involved in each other's lives on a daily basis. We're in constant contact with one another, you know. We're in each other's lives. We're you know, we see each other. I live with Brandon and Drew, you know, since last October. We have a house. And it's a safe place. It's another, you know, people come over and they do step work on the back patio. You know, they're like, Raul, he's like, hey, and do some step work with Sponsee. Come on over. Yeah, come on over, man. Whatever, you know. It's just, and that's enriching to me, because I'm an alcoholic and I don't like, you know, being by myself isn't, well, actually, it's not too bad. But you know what I mean? Like, wherever I go, I've got God. I know that, you know, there were times in this past year, maybe a year and a half, in reference to Dog Tired, Men Stag. There'd be like 8 of us out there on the back patio, you know. And, still the same thing that we're doing, reading out of the book, you know, talking about the solution, you know. And more importantly, you know, being the solution as much as possible in action, you know. It's one thing to read all this stuff, and then it's another thing to actually live it, you know, and that's where the attraction part comes in, and it's definitely something I picked up from all you gentlemen, and ladies. I love, you know, appreciate what I hear today. I love stories of people's lives, you know, because there's an identification I can recognize myself in different parts, and it's like God, you know, there's this definition, you know, whatever, and that definition to me is something that is a lot easier to understand through a story, you know, about the workings of higher power, and man, you know, and it's a far cry, you know, today being here, you know, 2 years and 8 months sober, and sleeping, you know, in the bushes and in the parks, and drinking and passing out, and drinking and passing out, and I don't forget that, and I'm very grateful for that. In fact, also, like my job, I go out in the, you know, desert, whatever, and do that, and I mean, I'm without, you know, electricity and running water and a bed and toilet paper, you know, for 8 days at a time. So I'm grateful for those things as well. I have that reminder on a daily basis. And truly, it's not about these material things in this world. You know, I've come to recognize that, and it's about the relationships with people. And you mentioned, you know, the healing that takes place as a result of doing the steps. And I really like that word, you know. I mean, it's healing for me to be here now with all of you, you know. And there's something that I get, and it's a feeling. Maybe can't put it all down in script, you know, but and take that back and then give that away, you know. Give it away. And then the more I extend my hand, the more I realize it's coming back to me, you know, helping my own self, you know. And it's a beautiful thing. And I've coined a term in my own mind for Harry. He's the non-navigator. You know, the group, you know, because God's the navigator, really, and the non-navigator, and you know, he's got the most time, and you know, I mean, you know, it's like the surrender part. Okay, so whatever God wants me to do, you know, I'm willing to do that. You know, if God wants me to breed muskrats, you know, I'll do that. You know, I mean, whatever. And I don't know. Another thing I've learned too is you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a sick person, and so I come here and little by little, you know, I learn more about myself. Like, when you were sharing, I got these waves of emotion coming through me, man. I didn't want anybody to know that I had tears in my eyes, you know, and then hearing you guys speak after that, I'm like, well, and I'm recognizing those walls that I still have about my own being and in touch with my humanness, you know, like, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, I felt it, you know, it was powerful, it was real. You know, and the proof's in the pudding. You know, I mean, it's this is real. It's not a phony baloney stuff. And so we've got a you know, we take a meeting into the men's center, the homeless shelter, where I met Sponsee a year ago. You know, and he's and see, man, this past year we had at one point we had a dwarf and a 6'2" gay Navajo. You know, in the home group. If you can't find identification in there somewhere, you know. We gotta somewhere else, man. You know what I mean? That's the identification. You know, we're all alcoholics, man, you know. And it's that common solution we seek. It doesn't matter, you know, who you are, where you come from. And that's the identification we have, and it's a common solution we agree on, you know. And it's a beautiful thing, man. And you know, I could go off about the blessings that have come in the past year, and you know, don't necessarily need to do that. You know, I just want to thank you all for being here, for you know, being part of my life. You know, very much, very enriching. And again, you know, it's something that fills me, and I'll pass it on because that's the only way to keep it. You know, not you know what, and it's not just in listening. Yeah, absolutely, man. You got to listen. You know. Just being with people, you know, and actually giving, you know, caring about what's going on, and then you know, offering your experience, and they'll do with it what they want. I was gonna say something else, but I know that I am. Not only am I responsible and accountable for my actions today, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I'm aware of that. But also, wherever I go and whatever I do, I feel that I'm a representative of Dog Tired Stag, you know, and that's important to keep in mind. So, you know, I'm watching you, you're watching me, and hallelujah, you know, it's a beautiful thing. There's no finish line, so it's an ongoing process, and everyday life is the path. And again, in the simplest forms, God is love. So I love you all, and thank you again.
Muskrat. All right. Next we got Brandon. You know, I always said, you know,
I'm glad that not everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous does Alcoholics Anonymous at the same time, you know, because if that were true, I'd have to quit my job because I'd have so much work to do with all my sponsees. So, you know, every once in a while, you know, you'll get one in enough pain where he's going to, you know, write, you know, but thank God they're all not in that kind of pain at the same time, man, because, you know, that'd be a lot of work to do. You know, it's Brandon's growing these days. It's good. He's writing. We're sharing. You know, and the good part about that is when, you know, whether I'm asking Ruben for advice or whether Brandon or Drew are asking me for advice, you know, when it all comes around, when it all goes full circle, I'm giving him my best advice. But I'm listening to me while I'm saying it, so it prompts me to do the next right thing as well. So come on up, Brandon.
Hi, guys. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Brandon. Sober since January 19th, 2005, and I'm extremely grateful for that. And, you know, I'm really thankful to be here, you know, to learn from you guys, you know, how to continue to stay sober. And also, you know, I get to learn from you guys how to put words to the way that I felt, you know, for my whole life. And I didn't know how to describe that stuff until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And, you know, when you guys were out in Arizona a couple weeks ago and Keith was sharing and he was talking about, you know, leaving a meeting and I'm from Texas, I'm a cowboy, and then going back home and changing, oh, I'm a biker. And, man, I can really relate to that, you know, and that just really spoke to my heart. And that's the way I always felt throughout my life, you know. I didn't have identity, you know, and I didn't feel any different. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I didn't automatically feel at home. You know, I didn't feel a part of instantly. And, you know, I didn't start to really feel a part of and to start to feel like I wasn't a fraud until I started to take the action, you know, to take the steps. And, you know, I was about a year, almost a year sober, and I moved back to Arizona. And, you know, I had made my amends in San Diego, and it's time to go back to Arizona. I did that, and I was sober, and I was grateful to be sober, and I was lonely. I was real lonely, you know, and so I was praying about it, and I went to a meeting that I'd never been to over at Bloopers, a place that we go a lot, and it was like a noon meeting, and I met Harry and Drew and Jason Milos, and they gave me a phone list, you know, and Harry said, we're going to hook you up, and, you know, that night they were going to play volleyball, and so I showed up, you know. And the next day they were going to a meeting, so I showed up, and I've just been showing up, you know, for the last just about 2 years now. And, man, it's an honor to be here. I've been hearing a lot of things that are really speaking to my heart, you know, last night. It's like on the drive up here, Tate and I were talking about, well, I was talking about my grandmother, and Tate was talking about how he used to have pancake eating contests when he was a kid, and my grandmother used to make crepes, you know, and I'd just eat crepes until I couldn't stand anymore, you know, and so I was, you know, I have real fond memories of my granny also, you know, and so when you were sharing last night, Les, it was really speaking to me, you know, and man, and that's the blessing of this to me, you know. And, you know, when I got to Dog Tired and these guys said they were going to hook me up, you know, and they did, it was like, well, here's a course of action, you know, some specific actions that we take to be a part of, you know. And I started taking those actions, and like I said, you know, I started to feel a part of something. And, you know, for once I started to feel like, you know, I didn't have to go back home on my way out to change my clothes, you know, to be who I thought I was. It was like, you know, started to feel like I could just go, just be me, you know, and feel comfortable about what I was doing and who I am. And, you know, it's
it's funny that Harry, when he was introducing me, was talking about the pain and the writing, and man, I've got an opportunity to learn a lot about myself lately, to do a lot of growing, I guess. And and it's been awesome. And the thing is, I forget what the answer is, you know, and it's always the same answer. It's like, you know, I was at a step study and going through my book, and, you know, my book's marked in and highlighted and everything all in the sides until I got to working with others. And it was like fresh off the printing press, you know, like black and white, beautiful, you know, not even a wrinkle in the page. And I'm like, for whatever reason, you know, it stood out to me right then, you know, like, all right, clearly I'm not paying attention to the directions. And, you know, so I started, I noticed that, you know, so I started taking the action and reading the instructions that are provided for me, you know. And so I started, you know, to get the opportunity to work with guys. And then, you know, I'm working with guys, and you know how that happens. What, you know, they don't stay around. Well, I forget that the directions, you know, are there, how to work with others. You know, it tells me specifically. And so I'm without sponsees, you know. And so I go to Harry, and I'm saying, man, I need to do something. He says, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. You tell me. I need to do something. And he said, well, aren't you the one that had the brand new book of how working with others, you know? So why don't you start there? So, okay, I forgot that. You know, it worked last time. Let me try it again. So I go home, I open the book, you know, I read like two pages, and the next morning, you know, I get a call from a guy that I was sponsoring like a month ago, and he went out, got drunk, and so he wants to start working with me, you know. And I'm like, wow, I didn't even have to, you know, all I had to do was crack the book, and then he found me. Like, this is awesome. And then another guy moves back into town, he's gone for like a month working, and wants to get to work. Okay. Well, now here's two guys, like, within, like, a day of asking for the direction, you know. And another guy shows up to the meeting. So I, you know, offered to take him to the steps, and he agrees. And so we're going through the steps now, you know. And, man, you guys offer so many gifts to me, you know. And another one of those is, you know, when you guys were there a couple weeks ago, Dave and Demo and, you know, some of us, we went to the Salvation Army, and you guys did a panel there, and there's like 60 guys at the Salvation Army. And, you know, well, two of those guys ended up asking me to sponsor them also. And so it's like, you know, from you guys doing what we do, you know, and showing us how to do that, it's like I reap the benefits in so many ways, you know. And now you guys are back home and here, and we're all doing what we do. And now I get to continue that relationship that started, you know, with you guys coming to build relationships with us, you know. And, man, it's a blessing. You know, like, Les, when you were speaking, it was really touching me. And I've really related to a lot of things that a lot of guys have said, you know. It's like Brian and Brandon were talking about, you know, their mothers and you know, my mother, father, alcoholic. And it's like, my mom was always honest with me, you know, about, you know, if I chose to drink and to do those things, it's like I would be too. And you know, so I'm a perfect example that self-knowledge avails me nothing because, you know, I knew what would happen. I mean, you know, I had no reason to doubt her. And, but, you know, it takes what it takes, and that's what it, you know, that was the case for me. And so today, you know, like all these guys have said, you guys are really entertaining, by the way. I forget that sometimes, but we have a lot of fun, you know. Our group has a lot of fun. And, you know, like they mentioned, the guys that I stay sober with are the guys I live with, the guys that, you know, everything that I do is with them. And that's such a tremendous blessing. And so, you know, we stay connected to one another. You know, like Tate said, we take that meeting to the men's center, and we got guys from the Salvation Army coming, and I have the best life I could know today, you know. And I know that it's a direct result of taking the action, you know. And like you shared, you know, like doing the work, you know, to reap the benefits. And, And I'm grateful to be here. And thanks for asking us to share, and I'll pass.
All right, I'm Harry, I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, guys. I haven't cried yet this weekend. Okay, tissues. Get ready, now. I called Ruben the other day, and I had a question. And I didn't have any answers. So I left him a message. And that was my message. I have a question and I don't have any answers. You know, when you get a minute, you know, call me. You know, so a little while later he called and he said, "So what's the question?" And I began to, I just began, you know, to explain the situation. But I didn't give him a chance to give me the answer, you know. And he asked me a question. I said, "Well, I know how I feel, but then why did you call me?" You know, so, you know, I jumped the gun. You know, I think I know what's best for me, which is kind of humorous when I stop to think about it. But what I'm really concerned about in the last year, you know, year and a half, because I don't know is what's best for my home group. And when these questions come up, like last year when we were here, you know, Ruben shared this part of the meeting, and yes, Ruben's my sponsor, but I think it was Keith that said it's Ruben's responsibility. Really lies with our home group to teach us, you know, to be there for us to, you know, to grow as a group. So, you know, over the last year and a half, there's been, like I said, I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm egotistical. You know, I know my God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And I also know the only way for me to get out of the way long enough, you know, to allow God to do that for me is to work with another alcoholic, because if I'm not working with another alcoholic, I'm thinking about me. And, you know, that's just me. I'm sure there's a few other people in this room that feel, you know, the same way. And so over the course of the last year and a half, you know, actually I have issues, you know. I have issues, and one of our issues was this gripping, controlling personality that lives, you know, underneath this suit and or this shirt and tie and stuff. And there were some resentments going on in our home group, and probably I'm guessing they all had to do with me. And you know, so I asked Ruben, and we. And everybody wrote that wanted to write in our home group, and we put it in a little manila envelope. And I didn't, you know, I didn't read it. I gave it to Ruben. And then we went to Lake Mead last year, and we got some direction. And, you know, I'm sure my direction was different than Drew's direction, although I didn't hear Drew's direction, and I'm sure Drew's direction was different than Tate's direction, but I didn't hear that either. But what I've come to see over the last year, that whatever that direction was, we got 40 guys in the backyard, and we've never been more solid. We've never more been more together. And you know, every night of the week, man. Monday we take, you know, we got guys at the men's center, and you know, we've been doing that for probably close to a year now, and we've pulled a whopping 3 guys, you know, out of that place, you know. But man, that's 3 guys, dude, you know. And that's good. And Tuesday night we have our home group meeting. Wednesday night, I believe it's Wednesday night, somebody chairs in Tempe. Thursday night, bloopers. Friday night, we got, you know, we're chairing meetings all over the place. You know, we're extending, we're going fishing, we're baiting the hooks. We're throwing the stuff out there, you know, and, you know, looking for the nibbles, and we're pulling them in. And, you know, if there's one thing, you know, that I've learned in the last 6 years, just from, you know, coming here and spending time with you guys is, you know, is that, I can only do what I can do. I know what I can do. And I, you know, can't do much. But as a group, you know, that I've seen over the last year, we, and that includes, you know, my home group, your guys' home group, you know, I talked to Grumpy the other day, you know, we can, you know, we can put a dent in this deal, and, you know, we can carry that message to the alcoholic that still suffers, and you know, and I remember, I don't know how many years, 3 years ago, Rick was talking, and I'm going to take a wild guess, it was his 18th anniversary or something like that, and he was talking about, you know, it took me X amount of years to figure out, you know, what my purpose was, and my purpose, as, you know, dictated in Alcoholics Anonymous, to carry the message of the alcoholic that still suffers. And, you know, I couldn't do that until, you know, until I broke down my barriers and asked somebody for help. I received the help, and, you know, Tate said it, you know, you can't keep it unless you give it away. So, you know, thanks for allowing us to share and be a part of your lives. And I know I appreciate you guys being a part of our lives. And let's close in the usual fashion.